for the bed in the second bedroom. He would use the phone plugged into the wall to charge both batteries and would place a battery into the vest phone just before it was ready for use. It would only get called once. Chapter 49, San Diego, California. Wednesday came quickly, though Reese did have a chance to rest, regroup, and reflect on his personal jihad. He did not question the righteousness of his cause. His only prayer was that he get to the end of his list before the authorities or the tumor took his life. Prioritize and execute. Reese hoped he looked the part. What did a master's business student taking an elective in comparative religion look like anyway? Reese had spent a year at the Naval Postgraduate School studying defense analysis with an emphasis on combating terrorism and asymmetrical warfare. He remembered his professors wearing a lot of tweed coats, so he picked one up, along with some non-prescription horned-rimmed glasses. A leather crossbody satchel completed the look. Reese tried to put on his least menacing expression before exiting his land cruiser and heading toward the mosque, passing an auto body shop and an abandoned warehouse as he walked. It wasn't the best part of town, but it wasn't the worst. Just a neglected neighborhood that you would move out of as soon as you had the chance. Reese felt naked leaving his pistol in the car, but he didn't know if he would be frisked before meeting Masood or if he would have to walk through a metal detector. If it had been a legitimately sanctioned mission, he would have forwarded those questions to his intelligence department in the form of an RFI, or request for information. But not having his accustomed support network, he was on his own to improvise. The satchel held the instrument of Masood's impending death. Reese just hoped he could get in front of the imam alone. The target package had stressed that in order to maintain credibility and cover for action, the mosque was a legitimate force for good, performing religious services in accordance with moderate Islamic doctrine, officiating marriages, offering family counseling services, and helping San Diego's downtrodden. That their masjid's moderate outward stance was really a front for ISIS would have surprised more than a few of the faithful. Reese wondered what those Muslims who willingly gave money to Masood in accordance with the third pillar of Islam would do if they knew it was going to further the radical militant branch of their religion in the guise of charity. Approaching the mosque along an avenue with more than a few burnt-out streetlights, Reese found himself walking down a different street in a different war, the streets of Baghdad's Al-Jihad neighborhood in the Al-Rashid district, 2006. After the Al-Askari mosque bombing in February, the country had descended into anarchy. Sunni on Shia violence escalated to the point of civil war, with bodies stacking up in the streets by the thousands, making an already tumultuous situation even more chaotic. Reese had been assigned to a CIA covert action program at the height of the insurgency, a small group of American advisors running a top-tier Iraqi special operations force. Even though Iraq was technically a sovereign country and the unit was Iraqi and totally off the books as far as the United States was officially concerned, they still had to get permission from both senior U.S. military leaders and CIA officials to enter mosques because of the political constraints of having U.S. personnel assigned in an advisory role. In the midst of that carnage, Reese's team had tracked a high-value individual to a mosque in the early morning hours and had him fixed with human assets on the ground and technical surveillance in the air. Mosques were routinely used by the enemy as places of sanctuary, where they could plan and hide with impunity. Even though the law of armed conflict clearly stated that a religious site would lose its immunity if it were used for a military purpose, U.S. senior military and political leaders were so scared of the fallout from hitting a religious site that they, in effect, allowed the enemy to plan attacks against U.S. forces from them, without fear of reprisal. The insurgents knew it and took full advantage. Reese had used the gray area in which his unit operated to skirt that technicality and had thrown the enemy off base with a highly successful campaign focused on targeting the insurgents where they felt safe and secure. The CIA side of the house, along with their attorneys, were in full support. But when the senior army general in Iraq found out about the program, he had his chief of staff read Reese the Riot Act. He demanded Reese call him for approval if they needed to hit someone using a mosque as refuge, which is how Reese and his team ended up waiting for more than an hour as the general took his time deciding if he should grant permission for Reese's predominantly Iraqi unit to enter the entirely Iraqi mosque. That delay provided enough time for enemy elements in the al-Jihad neighborhood to surreptitiously surround Reese's small force. Unfortunately for the enemy, Reese had quietly moved snipers into overwatch, had multiple aircraft circling, and a QRF of Bradley fighting vehicles staged four blocks away. What could have been a surgical spec ops direct action capture-kill mission turned into a 40-minute gun battle. Miraculously, Reese's force emerged relatively unscathed. Perhaps that is where Reese's distrust of senior officers began. Tonight's crusade was personal and had nothing to do with sensitivity toward Islam or the law of armed conflict. Tonight was different. Reese was under no constraints. He was unhindered by rules, regulations, laws, or societal norms. He was on the warpath, and his appetite for revenge was insatiable. Hamadi Ismail Massoud had facilitated the worst loss of life in U.S. Special Operations history. And tonight, he was going to pay. Chapter 50. Reese passed a vacant lot filled with weeds and approached the small domed building from the sidewalk, joining two other worshippers headed inside for evening prayer. He attempted to slouch his shoulders a bit in an effort to look less threatening as he passed a wrought iron gate and walked up the entrance steps. A young, Middle Eastern-looking man occupied an office just inside the building to the right, with a sign in English reading, "Welcome, Front Office."
Excuse me?
Reese said.
"Yes,"
he responded cordially, rising from his desk and approaching Reese.
"Assalamu alaikum,"
he said, using the traditional Arabic "peace be upon you" greeting, which Reese had heard many times the world over.
"Wa alaikum assalam,"
Reese responded, shaking hands and then touching his right hand to his heart.
"I'm Draper Kaufman from USD. I have an appointment with Imam Massoud after evening prayer. I was invited to observe tonight as well, but don't know exactly what to do," he continued with a warm smile.
"Ah, yes. You are the master's student from USD. It is our pleasure to host you tonight. The prayer room for men is downstairs. We have another for women upstairs. Please remove your shoes. You may observe from the back of the room, and then afterward, Imam Massoud will talk with you about the virtues of Islam and the noble work of the center, as well as answer any other questions you may have."
"I hate to impose. Thank you so much for having me. This comparative religion class is part of my international business program, but I am really excited about it."
"We do this all the time, so it is no imposition. In fact, community outreach is one of the guiding principles of the center."
Reese descended the narrow staircase. Donations certainly had not been used to update the facility. Reese guessed that the humble surroundings were what drew many of the patrons to this particular Islamic center. There were only about a dozen people preparing for evening prayer when Reese entered the room. They were performing the ritual ablution at a large round sink, washing in accordance with traditional Islamic practice. Reese skipped the washing and took his place in the observation area behind the congregants. All were men in conservative dress. A few more than half looked to be of Middle Eastern ancestry, with the remainder a mix of African Americans and Caucasians. The room was exceptionally clean and sparse, which allowed those gathered to clear their minds and arrange their prayer mats facing east toward Mecca. Reese recognized Massoud immediately from the target package photos and YouTube videos he had studied in preparation for this evening's mission. Massoud took his place as imam at the front of the assembly
and began the Salat in Arabic. Reese's Arabic language skills were terrible, but he knew enough to recognize a few words and phrases. Masood began with Allahu Akbar, reciting the traditional opening and then transitioning the service through the different phases of prayer, standing, bowing, prostrating, and sitting. Reese knew this ceremony was the formal way of subjecting oneself to and remembering Allah. There was a certain beauty to the service, a focus and devotion that Reese couldn't help but admire. There was no doubt that there was a crisis in Islam, and it was playing out on the world stage in a spectacle of violence. Reese had experience with Muslims running the gamut from those who were Muslim in name only to those who adhered to the pillars and tenets of Islam as best they could, similar to Christians who went to church on Christmas and Easter, right down the line to those Muslims who had been indoctrinated by an archaic ideology of hate that pursued a political agenda and would stop at nothing short of seeing all non-believers put to the sword. Those were the ones who could only be stopped with a bullet to the head. And at accomplishing that, Reese was exceptionally good. Masood finished with the taslim, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, before quietly making his way to the back to greet Reese. Mr. Kaufman, he said in a heavily British-influenced Pakistani accent, welcome to the center. Thank you for coming. Thank you for having me. The Salat was beautiful. I have always respected the value and ritual of daily prayer. It would be a better world if more people took the time to give thanks and remembrance as you do. Thank you. That is why we are here, to give believers a safe place in which to practice the facets of Islam and raise awareness about the pillars of our faith. Please join me in my office where we can have tea and continue our discussion. Reese followed Masood back up the stairs and down a short hallway to his small office, stopping at the front of the mosque to say goodnight to the man who had greeted Reese upon his arrival and was just getting ready to depart. Masood moved with a fluid grace that belied his 55 years of age. His hair was black and cut short, which contrasted with the gray of his close-cropped beard. He wore earth-toned slacks and a long-sleeved button-up shirt without a collar, instead of the more traditional thawb, probably in the spirit of Southern California inclusiveness. Please take a seat, Masood said, gesturing to one of two modest chairs in front of his desk as he set an old teapot on a single-burner electric hot plate on a small table positioned against the wall, an improvised tea-making station. Reese wondered how it hadn't burned the place to the ground yet. The room seemed to Reese what he presumed the office of a professor at an underfunded community college would look like. There were stacks of papers on the desk and a small bookshelf behind it, adorned with what appeared to be numerous religious texts. The walls were bare, save for one framed work of Islamic calligraphy. Masood noticed Reese looking at the painting. Beautiful, isn't it? It's a rendition of a Mir Ali Harawi Tabrizi. Brilliant calligrapher from the 15th century. It is a reminder that the Islamic Golden Age was really not that long ago. I thought the Golden Age ended earlier than that, offered Reese. Some scholars would suggest that, but the evidence proves it lasted up through the 16th century. This is to remind me of how far we have fallen and how much work there is to be done. Call it inspiration. He smiled. The Holy Quran states that God does not change the condition of a people until they change what is in their hearts. My calling is to help change what is in their hearts. Now, how can I assist you this evening?
Well, first of all, thank you for taking the time. I'm in a fairly ambitious international business program at USD, and one of my electives is comparative religion. It's a team project, and my part is to interview a well-respected Muslim leader about the current state of Islam in the world today.
Well, that certainly is a topic I spend a lot of my time researching and speaking about at the center and as a guest speaker around the country. As you probably know, Islam is the second largest religion in the world, as well as the fastest growing.
Why do you think that is?
Reese inquired.
Islam is a way of life. It is about subjugating oneself to Allah and following the pillars of Islam. It offers a code to live by that is appealing to a mounting number of adherents. It will be our golden age once again, but this time through inclusiveness.
What do you say to those who point to the draconian measures some Islamic countries take to control their populations and force adherence to Sharia law, like throwing homosexuals from buildings to their deaths, flogging young girls who want to go to school, and beheading non-believers?
The role of the center is not to compel non-believers to join Islam. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, says that there is no compulsion in religion, and we certainly do not believe in subordinating U.S. law to Sharia law. Those who practice the abhorrent punishments you mention do nothing but hurt the cause and turn world sentiment against those of us who espouse the true tenets of Islam. We are a religion of peace that some have hijacked for their own self-serving destructive means. In fact, I use Friday prayer to call for peace and unity. I have been condemned by some, but if we are going to live together in harmony, we must learn to accept each other's differences. The United States is the perfect place to show the world how both Muslims and non-Muslims can work and live together in peace.
This guy was polished. He had the air and presence of an academic with the charisma of an elder statesman. Why do you think the intolerant brand of Islam is currently flourishing in the Muslim world? Asked Reese, trying his best to sound like a grad student.
It saddens me deeply to have to agree with you, Mr. Kaufman. Corrupt politics and sluggish economic conditions plague much of the Muslim world. Radical Islam does not represent the vast, vast majority of Muslims worldwide, and almost all of those killed in Islamic terrorist attacks are, in fact, Muslim, he said, shaking his head. The answers, though, also lie within the religion. Islam was once a force for good throughout the world, and can be again. Education is the key, Mr. Kaufman. Education is the key.
Sir, do you mind if I use my computer to take notes? Asked Reese.
Not at all. Be my guest.
How are statements about peace, unity, and responsibility, like those you just made, interpreted in the Islamic community at large? Do you worry about your safety?
Reese continued as he reached into his satchel, removing an old laptop computer.
Instead of recycling old computers or selling them, Reese and Lauren had just stacked them in a closet in the name of data security. This particular one was state-of-the-art back in 1998. He had taken it from his home during the previous night's visit. It was quite a bit larger than today's ubiquitous MacBook Air, and with the keyboard, internal components, and touchpad removed, it fit Reese's Winkler Seok Tomahawk perfectly.
Statements of inclusiveness and tolerance are not always received favorably by those with differing agendas, nor is criticism of Islam, as you are no doubt aware. It pains me to say that other imams have even issued fatwas against me, but those who have done so do not have the legal authority necessary for them to be legitimate. Nor do they truly understand the history and intent of a true fatwa. So I feel as safe as one can in these times of trouble.
Reese studied the older man's face. Everything he was saying squared with Reese's studies and first-hand experience in the Muslim world. How could he talk with Reese with such authority and logic about the state of Islam, and then facilitate the same terror he was condemning with such conviction?
How can this guy be such a good liar? He should run for political office.
Hamadi, Reese said, intentionally switching to the imam's first name and wrapping his hand around his tomahawk's maplewood shaft, hidden by the open laptop screen. Do you know Captain Leonard Howard? Masood paused, successfully hiding his surprise.
No, that name is not familiar.
Oh, you may have forgotten. He's the Navy attorney that contacted you to arrange the ambush of my SEAL troop in Afghanistan by your friends in the Pakistani Taliban. How much did it cost to have my men killed? This time Masood did not try to feign ignorance or redirect. Instead, he paused and took a deep breath, his eyes narrowing.
Ah, James Reese, I did not recognize you. You look different from your picture in the paper from your wife's and daughter's funeral. The beard suits you well, and the glasses are a nice touch. Too bad your family were kafir, and are now in the fires of hell.
He spat out